My name is Mark Franklin, and you're listening to Buzz for Wednesday, March 13th.
Que voy a hacer, je ne sais pas. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais plus. Que voy a hacer, je suis perdu.
Are you fascinated by filmmaking? Curious about co-working? Today's Career Buzz guests connect the dots in their career stories so you can connect the dots in yours. This is Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. Thanks for tuning in this morning. What's it like to work in a co-working space? What's it like to run one? Find out from Beach Business Hub owner Martina Rowley and tenant and internet consultant Brian Gregoire in the second half of today's show. But first, Career Buzz goes to the movies. Bernd Euler loves movies and loves Canada. Put those passions together and you get the question Bernd asked himself. How hard could it be to create a Canadian film festival? Bernd Euler is founder and festival director of the Canadian Film Fest. He's also an aspiring writer and director himself. Now it's his mission to help promote, celebrate, and market this country's films. One film at the Canadian Film Fest is The Disappeared, and we have two of its makers to share their career and filmmaking stories. The film's marine coordinator, Bill Flower, has worked on more than 45 TV shows and movies. Bill started as a diver for salvage projects and added more roles to his career, including animal wrangler, running an ocean adventure company, lobster fisherman, and farmer. Ralph Holt spent more than 20 years with Telefilm Canada, including national sector head for English language feature film, and he greenlit many projects, including Bon Cop, Bad Cop, and Shake Hands with the Devil. Since returning to the private sector, Ralph has produced the feature film The Disappeared, screening at the Canadian Film Fest on March the 22nd. But first, not just a fan, but a champion for Canadian cinema, Ben Euler, founder and festival director of the Canadian Film Fest, joins me live by phone. Welcome, Bernd.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Bernd, what do you like about being the festival director?
What do I like about it? Truthfully, the last party after everything's done. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's it's a lot of favors called in. It's an ordeal getting this thing up and running, but I mean, you know, when you have something that you're passionate about, I mean, you go for it. And this is something that I think, obviously I am, but a lot of other people are. So, you know, it needs to exist.
And what does a festival director do? You know, if we took a look at your schedule for a week, what are all the things you get up to?
It's like, what don't I get up to? I do everything from like just online promotions to handling print traffic to advising filmmakers on how the fest is going down with their movies. I'm also the head programmer. When you start a company, you find yourself doing everything. I do have a small team with me. This year, a little bit bigger than last year, which is definitely a help, but I mean, I still have my hands in everything.
And what kind of skills do you use to be successful as a film festival director? What skills do you draw on?
You have to be organized. If you're not organized, then forget it. It would just be impossible. When I started it the very first year, I thought, well, I'll show some movies. I'll throw a couple of parties. How hard can that be? You know, then I didn't take into account corralling filmmakers, handling the print traffic, liaising with the theater itself, advertisers, the advertising company, setting up panel discussions, getting guests, making sure the website's okay, handling the social media aspect of it. I mean, things come up every single day that you just never, ever planned on.
Now, thinking about your own story, Bernd, how far back does your love of film go?
Oh, like since I was a little kid. I mean, I've never not liked or loved movies or stories of any kind. I mean, that's what we're trying to show. That's what we're trying to show at the festival is just really good stories. So we accept every genre, and we show every genre of movie, but as long as there's a good story, that's what we're looking for.
Right on. Hey, what did you do before you started the Canadian Film Fest? What was your career?
I was like in my 20s. It was like, what was I doing? I worked for a big media company, just doing computer work. I hated the job. I made a lot of money, but I was absolutely miserable. And all the while I was doing that, like having that real job that, you know, your parents expect you to have, I was always writing. Like, and I've been writing since I was in high school. So, that never went away, and I just finally one day thought, you know, this is not what I want to do, this computer job. I've got to change careers. So so doing the film festival was one aspect of that.
How long did that take? You know, lots of listeners might be in exactly the same situation that you were, and they toil away for a while until one of their passions, you know, just it can't be stopped anymore. How long was that for you?
Can I tell you, it never ends. It never starts and it never ends. It always just is. So you'll, like, let's say if you're in my case, which I know, you know, I've talked to a lot of people and they're in the same situation where they're in a job and they see and they feel stuck and trapped. And it's not what they want to do. They have aspirations to do other things, but they somehow can't get out.
Right. But how long was it for you? How many, was it 1 year? Was it 5 years?
I feel like I'm still there. I'll tell you the truth.
So you're still working on it.
Yeah, well, especially because, you know, we went on for 5 years, and the festival grew every year from 2004 to 2008. When the economy went downhill in 2008, people's sponsorship money just dried up. And because we've never been able to get any government financing, which is a strange, separate story in itself, I have no idea why the government won't, any level won't, fund a Canadian film festival, but we just had no money, and so I decided to put the film festival on hiatus for a little while, and we just came back last year, so I should be in a position where all those growing pains are out of the way, but I find myself actually really just starting the festival up brand new all over again.
Yes. So I said in the intro, Bern, that you had asked yourself, how hard could it be to create a Canadian film festival? How hard was it?
It's still hard. It's frustrating at times. It's like sometimes I shake my head and I don't understand why I'm doing this. But you know what? When the film festival actually happens, and here's where it always gets back to, you know, your actual passion, is that, I mean, I know, and I've had tons of filmmakers tell me how much I've helped their careers, how much I've, you know, helped people find their next project, and or even just screening time for their current project. It's really, really worth it, and it helps me because it helps me with my network connections and make new business friends or just friends. So, I mean, you know, it's a long, involved process. I think I'm still in that whole switching over phase, but it's just always worth it to do something you actually like. So,
right on.
It's not work.
We're talking to Bern Euler here. He's the festival director of the Canadian Film Fest coming up March 20 to 22. Bern, if listeners are curious about checking out the festival while we're listening to you, where do they go?
Well, they can go to our website, obviously, www.canfilmfest.ca. Or to our Facebook site, which is facebook.com/CanFilmFest. And we've got all the information up there. We go on March 20th to the 23rd in Little Italy at the Royal.
Right on. So you said in 2008, you know, the recession hit and the sponsorship dried up, and then it came back in 2012. You know, you didn't have to do that, but you did. What led to you coming back in 2012?
You know, it just seemed like the time was right. I mean, I had every time I'd go to any film party during that 4 years that I was off, I was always getting bombarded by questions from filmmakers. When's the Canadian Film Fest coming back? When is it coming back? We need this. You know, so, and then in 2012, finally, it seemed like sponsorship money started flowing a little bit, like people were willing to contribute. I mean, it's still a struggle getting it off the ground again, but it seems to be going really well. And
How do you pick the movies? You know, I think that's sort of an interesting part that lots of people wonder.
Yeah.
You know, once they see the screen, you know, they go to your website and there's all these movies. You picked The Disappeared. You picked other movies. How did you pick, say, a movie like The Disappeared?
Oh, well, The Disappeared, that's one of those easy ones. It picks you. It just, you watch that and you're like, oh my, how can I not screen this movie? It's what I'm looking for, which is a strong story. Beautifully crafted. It looks beautiful. The performances are stunning. Sean Doyle, who's in The Disappeared, actually won for Best Actor.
Right, he won an actor award.
From Actor, yeah. So, I mean, that's an easy one. I mean, unfortunately, I don't have more screens because I could have programmed a whole bunch more movies, but we don't, you know, we only have a limited amount of screens. So I every year I have to say no to a whole bunch of movies that really deserve to be shown, but you know what? I'm hoping, you know, within the 5 years, we have many screens. We're showing a lot of movies and giving audiences and filmmakers alike a chance to find Canadian movies on Canadian screens, because that's the difficulty right there.
Right on. Now, Bern, a lot of listeners, you know, love film. They would love your job, you know, working on a film festival, or at least they think they would love your job. What advice do you have for people who are interested in wanting to get into film in Canada?
Be prepared to eat poor. Be good at restaurant work. I'll tell you why. It's like, and I know tons of people in the same boat, especially if you want to be a director or a writer or an actor. You have to have another job to supplement your income while you break into the business, because at first when you get into the business, it's like you're interning for everybody everywhere. It's free work. You have to build up your resume and your reel so that when, you know, you are going to somebody for a bigger project, they can see that you've done some things, and you can only do that by doing things for free. So, I mean, there's a little joke in the industry, you know, somebody says, oh, I'm a writer or I'm an actor. You can just answer back, oh, cool, which restaurant do you work at?
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's so inspiring to listeners, but there's a real passion behind it, too.
You know what? It's not that it should not be inspiring. It's like you have to understand when these people following their passions, like they cannot do anything else. And they're so committed and willing to sacrifice in the short term for their longer term goals.
Yes.
That taking a job like serving or bartending is a very noble thing. I did it myself for a long time. And even in that industry, you can make a lot of contacts and, you know, make some short films.
Yes.
And write some scripts. It's a healthy thing, and these people have an amazing work ethic.
Bern, finally, before I let you go, what's one thing that you can share with listeners about what you've learned personally about making career and life choices, in, you know, the twists and turns that you've told us in your own story? What have you learned that you can share with listeners about making good career and life choices?
That, you know what, the harder it gets and the more frustrating it is, the bigger your payoff and the bigger your reward, and it's just worth it.
Right on. Bern Euler, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz today.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to Bern Euler. He's the festival director of the Canadian Film Festival, showing in Toronto March 20 to 23rd. You're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can listen worldwide online at CIUT.fm. One film at the Canadian Film Fest is The Disappeared, screening on March 22 at 7 p.m., and we have two of its makers to share their career and filmmaking stories with us, the film's marine coordinator, Bill Flower, and producer, Ralph Holt. We're just getting Bill on the phone right now, and Ralph Holt joins me live in our Toronto studio. Welcome to Career Buzz, Ralph.
Thank you very much, Mark. Good to be here.
So you've completed producing The Disappeared. Your actor, Sean Doyle, recently won an ACTRA Award. The movie is going to be shown at the Canadian Film Festival. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's really great. It's quite the reward.
So what did you like about producing this movie?
It was a real adventure, Mark. Incredible adventure. I mean, it was on the open ocean. We had our base camp, a 16 by 24 platform that was anchored, about a 45-minute boat trip away from the dock. We had a a crew of Marine support, which Bill will be telling you about, of two large Cape Island boats and three Zodiacs supporting this cast of six actors and and a crew of about 40 in all. So it was just a daily adventure, withstanding the weather, sun, rain, hail, sleet, everything. It was quite the adventure.
Now, you're one of the producers. If listeners have no clue, how does that work? What does a producer actually do on a movie?
Well, I think in other industries it is called an entrepreneur. So the producer has the gleam in the eye, the understanding of an idea that they want to take to the marketplace. And from there, they have to assemble all the creative elements, all the technical elements, and most importantly, the financing and distribution elements. So it's jack of all skills, master of none. And yes, it's a matter of coordinating and being a very good pitch sales agent.
So that describes one of the skill sets you need to kind of be entrepreneurial and a business perspective. What other skills and knowledge do people need to be a good producer?
I think a fundamental overview of what the film business is, from the actual manufacturing point of view, the crews, being able to work with unions, being able to work with specialized trades in terms of production management, accounting, and having a sense of the overall film market. And the distribution potential and possibilities. So it's a very general overview of everything, and I think also being willing to delegate through to those specialist trades and skills.
I bet you that's not easy.
Sometimes it makes you scratch your head sometimes.
Now we have Bill Flower, who is the film's Marine coordinator, and he joins us live by phone from Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. Welcome to Career Buzz, Bill.
Thank you, Mark. Good afternoon.
Now, you've been working on more than 45 TV shows and movies. What was special for you about working on The Disappeared?
It was kind of a step back in reality. It was, I'm used to working in tanks and green screens and large budget films, and we really went back to basics on that one. It was, the budget was very limited. And we, instead of using a green screen, we used black stormy nights, and we had rain that was almost impossible to shoot in, and that became our green screen. That washed out. We didn't use green screens. It was it was a real step back in technology, and the actors were fantastic. They put up with a heck of a lot, and they were chosen by the producers and by the director specifically for their ability to withstand the elements.
Right on. Now, Marine coordinator is just one of those jobs that most listeners will have never heard of. What is a Marine coordinator?
Well, it's pretty well the same thing as what Ralph does, but all I do is look after my the aspects of it on the water. It's you have to, procure the equipment, the boats, the fuel tanks, organized all the activities, on the water, and the safety. The safety is a major concern.
Yeah, I think that's where I'd like to go with that, Bill. I mean, I think the key decision to go or not go wasn't the money, wasn't the availability of cast, it was safety. And the number of hours that were put into developing a system where we felt that everybody involved would be safe in the ocean was like number one. Wouldn't you agree, Bill?
Oh, 100%. And it was decision making the night before, because we get up bright and early in the morning and head out on the ocean, and we relied on weather sense, not just the forecast, but the weather sense. And I surround myself with a team of professional mariners. It's not guys I pick up at the local yacht club. They're These guys actually, they make their living on the ocean.
Now, there's a great clip of the making of The Disappeared. And if listeners are in front of their computer and want to just have a peek at it, Ralph, you're in it, and Bill, you're in it. Ralph, how do listeners find that that clip?
Yeah, they can find it on our website, www.thedisappearedthefilm.com. And I should be able to find it very quickly on the front page.
Yeah, it's amazing to look at that. It gives you, unlike seeing the movie where you see the guys in the boats, and, when you see the making of it, you realize all these people were standing on this little 25-foot square platform in the middle of the ocean. And it's quite astonishing. Now, as a Marine coordinator, Bill, what special skills do you draw on regularly to be successful?
Really, my life's experiences on the water. It's I've got you know, hours and hours of training as I'm a commercial captain. And what I've done is I've applied my offshore knowledge of working on the ocean in all various conditions. I've applied that to the movie industry.
Right on. We're talking to Bill Flower and Ralph Holt. They were part of the team that made The Disappeared. And I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz 89.5 FM in Toronto and worldwide, CIUT.FM. Bill, let's get a little bit of your story here and figure out how far back your love of the ocean goes.
Well, as a child, I grew up, my father was a sailboat racer. He raced sailboats all over the world, and we used to deliver the sailboat from port to port, my brother and my father and I and other crew members. And I spent my summers on an island in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, where if I wanted to do anything, I had to jump in a boat and go ashore.
So then how did your actual career in marine coordination and diving, I know all of, you had all these different things. How did all of that start for you?
Well, I had two loves in life. One was animals, and I always wanted to be a veterinarian, and the other was the ocean. And I didn't have the university degrees to become a veterinarian, so I turned my trade and myself over to the ocean and stuck with it. I started out as a very young man as a saturation diver, probably one of the youngest ones in Canada at that time. And we did a lot of huge projects from raising the Ocean Ranger, the oil rig Ocean Ranger, back in 1983 and 84. Largest salvage in world history, and went on to do a huge treasure salvage down off the United States, off Nantucket. And it was just all these jobs had film crews coming out and documenting all our work, and we were always putting cameras on our submarines and cameras on our helmets and doing a lot of broadcast quality video back then. And even as a teenager, I worked for some underwater cinematographers as a support diver.
Now, you actually studied that. You did a degree before you started working in all of this. For listeners who are curious and think, wow, I love the ocean, or, you know, I love this stuff, what kind of studies did you pursue?
Well, I had a two-year associate science degree in underwater technologies, which I got from the Florida Institute of Technology in Florida. And then I went to work in the Gulf of Mexico and all over the place as a diver. And then I decided I wanted to get my bachelor's, so I went back and got a bachelor's in marine biology. And I specialized in photography while I was there as well.
Where did you do that degree?
That was in Stuart, Florida.
Yeah.
And it was at Florida Institute of Technology.
And then the marine biology degree?
I got that there as well.
No kidding.
Yeah, I spent, combination of about 5 years there.
You mentioned before something called saturation diving, and for listeners who can't picture that, it's quite an astonishing thing of what saturation diving is. You know, and you worked on one of these huge salvage operations like the Ocean Ranger. Can you just paint a picture of what that looks like?
Well, yeah, there's a real limited, back then especially, there's a real limited amount of people that had the credentials and the expertise to do the saturation diving. It's where you place yourself in a diving bell and a chamber, and you stay for 30 days at a time in a 6-foot diameter, maybe a 12-foot long sphere, and everything's pressurized, and your food and your body and everything is passed between the diving bell and the chamber. You have to climb through these pressurized tunnels, much like a spacecraft, and the bell, the diving bell, is then lowered to the bottom of the ocean, where you open the hatch at the bottom, and you're at the equal pressure. You swim out from the bottom, and you go about your day's work, which is explosives and cutting things up, and pretty very, very dangerous occupation.
So I hope they paid you well for that, Bill. If listeners think that sounds exciting and they want to get into saturation diving, I mean, that's an extraordinary thing. If you look it up, you can see YouTube videos and stuff. Do people get paid well for that, taking those risks?
Yeah, I did it primarily through the 80s, and I had a couple bad injuries and had to get out of the business. It was all work-related. Well, I mean, it was quite lucrative. In today's standards, maybe it wouldn't have been, but they're being paid a lot more now. There's very few guys that are willing to do it. It's the mindset. It's mind control and being locked up in a little tiny environment, breathing helium and talking like Donald Duck for days on end. You know, it's
quite astonishing. Now, you know, you've had such an interesting career with so many twists and turns, Bill. In a couple of minutes, can you pick one or two turning points for you that you might be interesting for listeners through all the different things that you've done as an animal wrangler and an ocean adventure company? What are a couple of key turning points?
Well, the biggest thing was in the late 80s, the oil industry shut down here in Nova Scotia. And it's funny to, I remember the exact terms, until oil is worth $14 a barrel, it is not going to be economic to drill for oil off Nova Scotia. You know what I mean? That was only in like 84, 85. And they were still down around $7 a barrel or something like that. But the oil industry shut down, and I saw it coming. I didn't want to leave. I bought a home, and I had a family started. And, well, one of the film companies came along, and they were looking for professional captains to run boats on a movie set. And one of these famous Marine coordinators from the States and California came up and hired me to be a captain with local knowledge. And this happened a number of times, and they kept coming back to Nova Scotia because of all the film incentives, the tax incentives and stuff. And I know Ralph was heavily involved with that back then. And another film would come, and they'd point the fingers towards me. And before long, they quit bringing the famous Marine coordinators in from all these other places and started hiring me directly to do the job.
And you became the famous film coordinator.
Yeah, something like that.
If you look up Bill Flower on IMDb, you'll see the 45 or so TV shows and movies. It's just astonishing what you've done, from Moby Dick to The Disappeared. Just an amazing career that you've had. Has it kept you busy? Have you been, you know, you live in Nova Scotia, and what we hear, you know, here we're in Toronto, and you hear everybody in Nova Scotia is doing 27 things in their careers to make ends meet. Is that you?
Very much so. I've been on three different film sets in the last week, scouting and meetings and so on and so forth. Yesterday I was with Trailer Park Boys. They're shooting another feature film down here, and I'll be the animal wrangler on that. And I've been dealing with the BBC. They're doing Story of the Essex, which is what over in the UK and then down in Malta. And the Essex was the ship that was sunk by a white whale, and Herman Melville penned the story of Moby Dick based on that. And they're doing that show, and that was a lot of fun getting involved with them. And there's been a show from BC that's coming out that's going to have animals and a lot of water work on it. So it's quite busy, but like you said, you have to diversify. You can't rely on it. We've had dry years, and the last couple of years have been quite lucrative and quite busy.
And lobster fisherman and farmer.
Yeah, when I have to. We have a farm here. We keep a lot of border collies, and we have a lot of sheep. We've sold our cattle. They've no longer profitable. But the sheep and the border collies we use on a lot of film sets. And I have nine of them going on a set here in a couple weeks, and for one shot. It's my wife helps me with it. She looks after the farm primarily when I'm away working. And the lobster fishing is wintertime employment, and we don't do many films in Nova Scotia in the winter, so we go out on the ocean and catch lobsters.
Just amazing. We're going to have to take a break in a moment, Bill. Stay with us.
Sure.
We're gonna come back, and Ralph Holt, we're going to come back and hear a bit more of your story and find out how The Disappeared came together. You're listening to Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto, CIUT.FM worldwide, and we'll be right back.
This hour of Career Buzz is brought to you by...
I'm a dental hygienist and a proud professional. I chose dental hygiene because I like health sciences and working closely with people. I received a quality education from a variety of dental professionals in a beautiful facility. I'm happy I chose Regency Dental Hygiene Academy. Visit regencydha.ca for more information.
CIUT 89.5 presents David Barsamian, the award-winning founder and director of the radio program Alternative Radio. David will be speaking at Hart House, University of Toronto, on Wednesday, March 27th at 12 noon. David will present a talk that will be based on his most recent book, Power Systems, Conversations with Noam Chomsky. Tickets are $30 for this event and can be purchased through uofttix.ca. That's uofttix.ca. Tickets are limited, so get yours soon. All proceeds will go towards CIUT's upcoming membership drive, The Evolution Continues. So please join us on Wednesday, March 27th, 12 noon, in the debates room, Hart House, U of T, as CIUT presents David Barsamian.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, practice leader of a team of professional career counselors at careercycles.com. Before continuing on with today's show, I want to let listeners know about the inspiring archive of Career Buzz stories. If you click the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com, on February 27th, we talked about the superstore of experiences that you get when you join a membership-based organization like JCI Toronto and you volunteer. We had three presidents of JCI Toronto join us. And you can also check jcitoronto.ca and click on events, and you'll see something about a career and life clarification event on March 27th. On February 13th, Melissa Rodway guest hosted a show on women in trades, which was just fascinating. And February 6th, we had Career Buzz went to Jamaica, and we had five interviews from Jamaica. And before that, on January 23rd, you can hear Dragons Den star Arlene Dickinson, who was my guest along with two Dragons Den pitchers. So click Career Buzz at the careercycles.com website. So we're continuing on here. We have Bill Flower on the phone from Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, was the Marine coordinator for The Disappeared, and Ralph Holt was its producer. Ralph, you've been in film for quite some time. You worked at Telefilm Canada. What drew you into the world of film in the first place?
Well, I think there's a common theme with everyone that gets involved in the film. They just love the movies, and certainly that was my experience. And I had the opportunity to take a couple of courses in television production that gave me the fundamental orientation towards the industry. And coincidental with that, the National Film Board set up its regional studio in Atlantic Canada. And I just dropped in and said, I want to make films. And they said, come on in. And luckily had the opportunity to work for a number of years on contract with them until such time as it sort of became time to spread your wings and get involved in more commercial efforts. The opportunity to work at Telefilm came up, and it was quite an offer. It was an opportunity to work with filmmakers in all four Atlantic provinces, which I hold near and dear to me. And so for the next part of my career, I had the opportunity to help build the industry, as I said, in French and English, in all four provinces. And it was quite a joy, and it was quite inspiring for me. And then there was the point where, do you have another chapter in your life? And I said, yes, I'd like to see what it's like to actually get back to making movies.
What's Telefilm, for the listeners who aren't familiar with it, in a
sure.
sentence, what is it?
Telefilm's the federal government's organization which helps to finance the making of Indigenous Canadian feature films. It does so by investing a small proportion in the overall financing structure and makes it more direct for Canadian producers to make films that are uniquely and distinctly Canadian.
Right. What's one highlight that you can share with listeners of your time at Telefilm?
Oh, a highlight. I think the most fun was probably Bon Cop, Bad Cop. I mean, it was a comedy. It was outrageous. The producer himself, Kevin Tierney, was a laugh a minute. And it was one of those films that actually was so Indigenously Canadian, though, like painfully Canadian, but still a whole bunch of laughs. And, of course, went on to do a stellar business across Canada and in Quebec.
Now, you then left Telfilm and you started producing a movie, this first feature, The Disappeared. What was it like for you to be on the other side of the Telefilm table? At one point, you were the person who was listening to the pitches of producers like you, and now you're on the other side of the table pitching them. What was that like?
Right. I think there's a book called The Agony and the Ecstasy. it's a very painful process. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, it's an entrepreneurial process. There's risk-taking, there's pitching, there's organizing, there's frustrations. But then there's actually the shooting and, of course, the wonderful premiere at the end of the journey, which is so fulfilling.
What's your perspective on making money in Canadian film?
You know, it's a cottage industry. It's not really, I think a few have been able to make quite a bit of money at it, but it's just a very difficult ongoing process. I think with the new models of distribution, the game is changing dramatically. And I think with change comes opportunity. And I think now that you're seeing a lot more Canadian filmmakers ranging out of the Canadian borders, beyond the Canadian borders, and finding opportunities around the world.
Young people listening to this broadcast thinking, wow, I love the movies, I'm Canadian, I want to get involved. What advice do you have for them?
You know, it's one of these industries where persistence is a huge part of it. You know, there's a lot of people who want to do it. You have to be dedicated. You have to learn, be open to learning, collaborative. All those various elements of working with people, and in the end, persistence.
Bill Flower, you were the Marine coordinator for The Disappeared. You've been working in film in Nova Scotia and all over the place. What advice do you have from your perspective for people interested in getting involved in film?
Be professional. The biggest thing I see is people go in and they want to make films. They think it's cool, it's neat. I think you have to go in, get your education. You have to learn by starting at the bottom and working your way up. And, you know, you have to listen and be polite. And it's we've got some really fantastic crew down here in Nova Scotia. We have different levels of experience. And, you know, it's surround yourself and listen and learn as an individual. You have to, and then pick a field that you want to be in. Do you want to be in the art department? Do you want to be behind camera? And then follow your goal, you know, follow it. Work hard at it and do the best you can.
And Bill, with all of the twists and turns in your career story, what can you share with listeners? Advice or experiential learning about making good choices in your career and life?
Listening and learning. I've obviously made mistakes. We all do. I like to surround myself with professionals. I like to be polite, and I spoke when spoken to. I've always been told. you know, you've got to. In the film industry, we have so many different people. They come from all, you know, different walks of life. We have the ones that have zero education, have worked their way up from the bottom, and they are very successful. And then we have, you know, the guys that have gone to film school and they've learned. And you know, it's very important to take your courses and be a professional. That's really, you know, my claim to fame is the people that are around me, and I hire them, and I hire them for their specific attributes. And you know, if I'm doing a Disappeared, for instance, I have a fantastic guy. We call him, he's nicknamed Dory Mike. Every time we have a movie with Dory's, Mike's in him. And he was a great help on Disappeared because that's where we were. We were in two Dory's. So you're only as good as your team.
Yes. Great advice. And Ralph Holt, from your career and life story, what can you share with listeners about making good choices?
Making good choices. I think you just have to pay attention, bring all your acumen to the table, and believe in yourself. And I think the rest follows.
If people want to learn more about The Disappeared, how do they do that?
Well, we're on. We have our website, www.thedisappearedthefilm.com. We're on Facebook at Facebook, The Disappeared Film. Yeah, those are the best two places to find.
And the movie is screening at the Canadian Film Fest.
Yeah, we're screening at the Canadian Film Fest Friday, the 22nd of March at 7 p.m. And if you go through the website at the Canadian Film Festival, you'll be able to buy tickets online.
Right on. Ralph Holt, Bill Flower, thank you both so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, you've been listening to the two filmmakers from The Disappeared, and you're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. What's it like to work in a co-working space, and what's it like to run one? Beach Business Hub owner Martina Rowley is here to help us out. And before starting her co-working business in 2012, Martina worked as a community animator. She's also worked in the environmental sector, and she's an active volunteer. And one of Martina's tenants is internet consultant Brian Gregoire. They both join me here in studio. Brian and Martina, welcome to Career Buzz.
Hello, Mark.
Thank you very much.
So, Martina, what do you like about leading this co-working business of yours?
Well, I'm a people person, so I like bringing people together and having a space to provide, well, as the name says, a hub, a gathering place where various people from different backgrounds can get together, share ideas, collaborate, and not work alone.
Yeah, so it just paint a picture of what that looks like for listeners who haven't seen a co-working space or don't know what it is.
Right. Well, a co-working space, if you imagine what sort of a typical office or office center might be, is you have the hallway and then everyone has their office and you close the door and you're basically working on your own. The co-working space is really the antithesis of that, is where you have an open plan, mostly open plan workspace, where you can book a desk. It might be a shared work desk, like the, you know, harvest style tables you see in a lot of coffee shops and so on. Or you can have a designated desk space. You can bring your computer in and work away. But you have a lot of shared areas that everyone who uses a co-working space will use. So you'll have a shared casual area. There'll be meeting rooms. Some spaces that are a little larger than my hub will also have some private offices where teams of up to two or three can rent an office just for their team, or if you just are one person and you need to have, I don't know, if you perhaps need to be on the telephone more, that might be disruptive to others in an open work area, you can close the door and sort of have a bit more privacy. But in general, it's more about having a shared space and using shared facilities, so one printer, one, you know, photocopy and so on.
Right on. Now, it's both a business and it's a social experience. What skills do you draw on to be successful to run this business?
Well, as you mentioned, one of my past jobs was as a community animator, which was essentially being a facilitator for community groups that wanted to do some greening in their neighborhood. So in those few years of working as an animator, I had to connect groups with other groups, individuals who wanted to get engaged with groups and find funding, connect them to the city departments that could help them and so on. And I really enjoyed that aspect a lot of having a knowledge and of how the city works, how the different funding organizations work, how to organize an event, where to even start. So I really enjoy bringing that all together and pulling all these, you know, holding all these strings and bringing them all together and then sharing that information with others and so that they can then continue. It's like training the trainer.
Yes.
You're training other people and then enabling them to be more confident and able to go out there and plan projects themselves.
What's amazing about your career story is you took all the skills and knowledge that you had developed prior and then figured out how to build a career around them, as opposed to going and searching for jobs, you know, and clicking the send button with your resume and praying that something happens. You just went ahead and said, this is who I am. Let me build something that reflects who I am.
Exactly.
That's a great story. Now, Brian Gregoire, you work in the Beach Business Hub. What do you like about working in a co-working space?
Initially, for the first year or so, I had been working at home, and I just had too many distractions. And you know, I'd go into the kitchen to make a sandwich, and then I'd read the business section or the sports, and all of a sudden, an hour goes by, and I got to get back to work. And so I just found too many things that were just distracting me. And then the other part of it was the isolation. I'm a sole proprietor. So, you know, with that, you're everything. You're the CEO, CFO, CMO, mail deliverer, whatever. And when you're doing that and you're on your own, most people don't have expertise in all those areas. So, you know, it's great to be able to rely on people like that. When I was 30 plus years in corporate and always had people to lean on and bring in or whatever. So when you're on your own, you really need to network and find those specialties. And the co-working space is amazing for that. I've had tremendous success in meeting other people who have specialties or skill sets that I don't, and we've shared, and I do that they don't. And, you know, and it's great. It just really makes things a lot easier.
Right on. I mean, it seems like a real trend. Anybody listening to this can kind of say, yeah, there must be a lot of people like you who are maybe had some corporate experience, who are working on their own. And this professional isolation, I think, is one of the keys. And this is what the impetus was for you to join.
Well, I initially fell into it from traveling to different parts. I had to go to Barrie once, and I had heard that there was a space there, and I had a couple of hours to kill between appointments, so it was basically looking to rent a space without being in a busy, loud coffee shop. Then I was in St. Catharines, and I heard there was another one there, and the same thing, and I kept saying, oh, it'd be great to have one in like the East End of Toronto in the beach, blah, blah, blah. And then I got this email one day from Martina with a survey about what do you think about a hub in the beach? And wow, this is great. So I filled it out and sent it in.
So that was how you connected. You hadn't heard of her before that.
No. So how did he
end up with that survey, Martina?
I think it must have been something indirectly because he's not on my distribution list, or he wasn't until then. So I send it to all of my contacts and all my friends. So I think it was sort of a forwarded message that he received from someone else, maybe from our local counselor, who is a personal friend of mine. And then he completed the survey and I connected with him, and Brian was very interested in the whole concept and came to the grand opening at the beginning of November and then immediately jumped on it and said, yes, I want to be a tenant here.
Yeah. You know, it demonstrates something I found a lot with the career stories of clients and guests on the show. Brian, your story, you had a desire, you had a want, you know, and you articulated it and you kind of thought about it. Wouldn't it be great if I had something to do? And you just held that want in your mind and then you just wait for the clue and the clue finally comes. But if you have the want, the clue kind of fits in and then you think, aha, that's it.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's a nice way that story unfolds rather than you having to do all the hard work of going out and searching for things on your own. It's just a receptivity.
Yeah, kind of that, you know, like the law of attraction kind of thing. When you're thinking about something and you're being positive and you're continuing to work on it, those things tend to just
right on. I see that all the time. And if people don't say what they want and they're busy complaining about what they don't like, which is what many Canadians are doing, then, you know, you just find the opposite clues. They give you more clues about what you don't want and you know, it can be a negative spiral instead of a positive one. So, Martina, how did you get into this? How did this come about for you?
It's rather a long-winded story, so I have to try and summarize that. I lost my job a year and a half ago as one of the cuts of the gravy train. I had previously
the City of Toronto.
Yes, the City of Toronto. I was on a third-party contract with a non-profit organization, and our contract got reduced from 5 down to 3 years. So I found myself without a job and was trying last year in 2012 to get back into the environmental sector, which I really wanted to work in. And it was just impossible to get anywhere near an interview or any jobs. And colleagues of mine found the same thing who were trying to find the same field. Even if you have the background and the degrees and so on, it just wasn't happening last year. So as my end of EI support was starting to come closer, I knew I needed to do something. So I had really two options. I could either just find any job and maybe go into a temporary position or something that I'm not going to enjoy and going to be miserable at. Maybe secure financially, but miserable. And I didn't want to do that. I've done that in the past, and I just refused to go back to that. So the other option was to try and go out and do something on my own. So the idea then developed from just starting a little local pop-up shop in one of the available spaces in the beach, because there are quite a few of them empty on Queen Street. And from having just a community center and an environmental education thing for the community on a, you know, non-profit business to, well, it has to be profitable longer term if I need to actually turn this into a job. So then I threw in the idea of turning it into a hub and a telecommuting center. And then from there and from conversations with other people, it just developed. And because I knew of other co-working spaces, notably the CSI, the Center for Social Innovation, where our team had previously had many meetings, I loved the vibe and that whole concept of sharing a space and not working on your own, even if you are sole proprietor, as Brian said. So I really liked that sort of companionship. And the idea just sort of grew. And eventually, once I found a business coach and they trained me into narrowing down my scope a little and being more focused on what the idea really could be, I started investigating it and found that there really wasn't anything sort of, you know, much going on east of the Don Valley. And after I did that survey that Brian participated in, I realized that there seemed to be a desire for it in the East End, and that's how I got to it.
Great story. We're talking to Martina Rowley. She's the owner of the Beach Business Hub in the beach in Toronto. One of her tenants, internet consultant Brian Gregoire. Here on Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM and CIUT.FM worldwide. So, Martina, you started this business. It is a business. And often people think, gee, to start a business, I'm going to need a whole pile of money to get started. And how do you do that? How did you get the money to get started?
This is maybe not the best thing to say on air, but I didn't exactly have huge resources. It really was a little bit out of desperation because the job market wasn't forthcoming. My EI was going to be running out soon. So I scraped together whatever savings I did still have. And I do have two angel investors who really loved the idea and who know me well enough to trust me with their money, with some of their money. So I had a few investors who gave me a loan to get me started.
For listeners who hear this term angel investor, yes. It's a term that we hear, you know, and how did that work? What did you have to do to present your idea to these prospective angel investors mm-hmm. for them to say, Martina, we trust you. This looks like a good idea. Here's a pile of money. Go for it.
Maybe they're sort of more of a informal angel investors. They were personal friends of mine, and it was a very informal process because of that as well. They just heard me talking about the idea that I was planning to do this, and I kept sort of, you know, keeping them up to date on where I was with the idea and the concept. And there were two or three friends who immediately said, if you need some money, I can lend you some money to get started because I believe in this project and I believe in you and think you can make this work.
Did you buy the building or are you renting?
I'm renting a commercial space.
And, you know, how? Give us a ballpark. How much does it cost to start a business like this?
Oh, dear. I think I'd like to stay away from financial numbers, but anyone who lives in the beach knows that rental space there is horrifically expensive. Now, being on the third floor helps. Uh-huh. I'm not right on the street level, so it's a bit more affordable. I know. It really depends on the business. I mean, for where you need to rent a space, as I'm doing, obviously the startup cost is so much higher. I had to buy furniture. I had to buy equipment for the kitchen, all the desks and so on, printers, computer. So it's a much greater startup cost than, say, other colleagues of mine in the business coaching class that I attended who are starting a business they can run out of their home.
Yes.
And where they're not having to buy things other than maybe materials and get their website and business cards. So it could be anything from 5,000 or 10,000 upwards, depending on the facility that you require.
And how is the money now that you've got the business? How's it working out financially?
It's still tight. I mean, I'm only in month 5 of the business, just about. And I'm finding that there is not a lack of interest in working in a co-working space. There are a lot of entrepreneurs in the beach and the area who work from home offices and don't have client meeting rooms who really like yes. the space and have
how
a need.
How big is it? How many tenants can fit in there?
So the space is just under 1,000 square feet, so 13 is my max, yes.
And Brian, so you came, you got this email and you heard about it and you came to have a look at it. What did it look like to you? How was it for you to imagine yourself working there at first?
Well, I'd been familiar with a couple of other co-working spaces. So, you know, the term hub makes sense. It's,
yeah.
you know, it's an area where there's people sort of congregating, typically quiet, but, you know, when people get up for coffee, they're sharing information. But there's a great boardroom, that seats very comfortably 10 people and, you know, squeezing people in, you can get probably 13 or 14. And then there's a great, small meeting room space that can easily fit 4 people. From that perspective, you know, that's far more comfortable than me bringing them into my office in my home that I'm not terribly organized and I have
yeah.
paper everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So that's good. How much does it cost? How much does it cost you?
Well, I currently rent on a monthly basis. So, you know, Martina has hourly space, and I thought about that first, and I thought about maybe 2 or 3 days because I'm out on the road a lot. But the monthly was very attractive to me, and it's significantly less than, like, it's $450 a month, which is typically less. Sorry, $425 a month. I was kind of averaging out.
Martina has some other but just to give listeners a feel for it. So it's $425 plus tax yes. for a monthly.
Yeah.
And Martina, if people want to do an hourly thing and they want to come for a few hours, what's the range?
Yeah,
there?
The hourly rate is sort of a base rate of $15. But if you buy a package of 10 or 20 hours or 50, the hourly rate drops down to $750 or $450 an hour. And that includes the use of Wi-Fi, all the shared spaces, as well as a few hours of meeting room space for client meetings. And then there's also a day pass if someone wants to come in for a day is $25 just to give the thing a try. Or then there's a weekly and the monthly that Brian mentioned.
Right. And Brian, what is your business? You're running it out of the...
Well, I'm an internet consultant, and what that means, I work with a network of about 1,700 other consultants all around the world. We network regularly twice a week in webinars. We stay on top of what's new and what all kinds of businesses need in terms of their entire internet presence. So that's site, search, social, and mobile. So what I do is I need to network with a lot of specialists, web designers, communicators, people who, you know, copywriters, graphic artists, all that. And so the more of those people I know, the better I can support my clients.
Right on. So we just have a moment more. In a word or two from your own personal experiences, what can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making good choices in life and career? Martina?
For me, it really is not to stay stuck in a job that you hate,
yes,
and that makes you miserable even when you're not there. That whole Sunday night syndrome, oh my God, it's Monday, I have to go back to that awful job. I don't ever want to go back to that, and I'm not there right now. I love going to work, and I've still got a smile on my face when I come home
late in the evening. And Brian, on your end?
For me, I would say it's preparation and adventure. And I use the term adventure instead of risk.
Right on.
And people just need to head in that direction.
Great.
And they'll be
Martina, if people want to find out about the Beach Business Hub, what's the site?
The site is beachbusinesshub.ca. There's a lot of information, the background about co-working and how the space works, and also a lot of photos to see how it looks.
Right. And Brian, to see your business?
My my website is wsiwebmarketingmatters.com.
Great. Brian Gregoire and Martina Rowley, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thanks very much.
Thanks,
Mark.
You've been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Here on CIUT 89.5 FM, I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. Other hosts of Career Buzz are Angela Fitzpatrick and Leanne Sachs. If you have comments on today's show, please email me. It's mark@careercycles.com, Mark with a K. Thanks to my guests today, Bern Euler, Ralph Holt, Bill Flower, Martina Rowley, Brian Gregoire. Technical production was by Melissa Rodway. An MP3 of today's show is available from the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com. Catch Career Buzz every Wednesday at 11 o'clock here on CIUT. That's it for today's live version of Career Buzz. Thanks for listening.
CIUT 89.5 presents David Bar-